It's That Other Masonic Podcast. Here's Jared Adkins and Todd Whaley.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of That Other Masonic Podcast, Indiana's first Freemasonry podcast. Brother Jared Adkins.
Yeah, I'm Brother Todd Whaley.
We're coming to you again from Newburgh Lodge 174. Our Newburgh files is what we're calling this one.
Sessions files.
So we got a heavy hitter with us for this episode.
We got a past big dog here.
So we've had Roger Van Gordon on the show. He's past Grandmaster. Now we've got another one. Earlier this year, we opened the season, which shout out to us. No other Masonic podcast that I can think of has ever had their current sitting Grandmaster on the show.
David G. Morgan.
So, but today we're going to talk to a brother and get some of his Masonic journey and some cool stuff he's involved with. And
absolutely.
Well, you know what? Let's let him introduce himself. Brother, would you introduce yourself?
My name is Kenneth Roy Jr. and I'm from Evansville, Indiana. I've been a Mason since 1977.
Wow. I was 10 years before I was born.
A year before I was born.
Now you're trying to make me feel old.
I'm not trying. Just, you know, the numbers don't lie, Dave or Ken. I know.
I think about him all the time.
I've got his pin. As I've mentioned, I've got pins everywhere now. Multiple hats. I've got his pin on one of my hats. I don't remember which one it is.
Right. Well, you're also past Grandmaster of the Grand Lodge of Indiana.
Yes.
What years were you Grandmaster?
From 2019 to 2021, I served for 2 years.
Because
of the pandemic,
which
season.
Before we get started, I do want to just briefly bring that up. But what, Kenny, I was active for the first 5 or 6 years, and then I was away for 8 years. And those 8 years I was away included the pandemic area. So I just kind of want to know what was being the Grandmaster like during the COVID pandemic? How, like, that had to be just the worst, right? I mean, you guys couldn't meet for the longest times, right?
Pretty much, yeah. We had to shut the state down, and we were just following guidelines set by the state of Indiana. at the time that this occurred, I remember we were at a meeting, and we were discussing plans for a rededication for a lodge up in Clinton, Indiana. And it came through that everything was shut down, and we at that meeting did a round table discussion and decided that there was no choice. We had to just shut the entire state down until we had a feeling and could find out for sure exactly what was going on.
Right.
So yeah, it was a very unusual thing to do.
Yeah, I remember the night I got the email saying that
this was a year before I came back.
It's supposed to stop. We were supposed to have a degree at our lodge, Bethlehem Lodge, that night.
And they had it because Jackie was there, and everybody found out about it just shortly before the degree went, and they're like, so they went ahead. People started distancing, but they went ahead and had it. Yeah,
yeah. Which I thought, okay, now what? I mean, this could really hurt Masonry in general. But in theory, I think it kind of brought it closer together.
Oh, well, I can really hope so. I know it affected, excuse me, I got a little frog. It affected all the appendant bodies that they were meeting around the different parts of the country. And, you know, even though I, as a Grand Master, I didn't have any direct control over the appendant bodies themselves, as Grand Master, you do over the Masons that are part of those bodies.
Right.
And so for the health and welfare of our members, we had to err on the side of precaution and just
absolutely
stop.
Yeah. I know when I came back to Lodge in October of 2021 after being away 8 years, so by that point we're a year and a half into the pandemic, but when I came back, you still seen guys wearing masks, you still seen hand sanitizers set up all throughout the Lodge, and we were already a year and a half into this. And even now, the holdovers of that today, you still see some brothers wearing masks. You do see hand sanitizer everywhere throughout the lodge now. Like
that's, all over the country, everywhere he goes, hand sanitizer.
That's stayed over. But I don't want to spend too much time on that. We had the chance to talk to the Grandmaster that had to say, hey, we're going to have to follow guidelines. And that's just.
Which I talked to you about in the fellowship hall and everything. Like, when was the last time a Grandmaster served 2 terms in the Grand Lodge? He said it was probably back in the late 20s, early 30s during the Depression.
I could see that.
I think that was correct. If I don't remember the exact date or who was the Grand Master, but yes, it's rare.
Very
rare. Has happened in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I don't know, it kind of just tells you how nice the Grand Lodge is to have people who are actively in that line moving forward every year. I mean, it kind of makes you think that masonry is strong in Indiana. I mean, yeah, our numbers might be down what they used to be, but masonry in general, I think, is still pretty strong in the state of Indiana.
I'd agree.
I'd have to say that Indiana is a pretty Masonic state.
I think so, and I've met good people, good Masons, through all my travels.
Mm. All right. You got something?
No, I'm ready. I'm ready to officially get started, and I do want to talk a lot about this trial, because ever since Brother Troy mentioned it a couple of years ago, and it's really picked up steam. But before we get there, I kind of want to go through the motions of like we normally do.
Yeah.
And so once again, I want to thank Past Grandmaster Kenny Roy for being a guest on the show. Yeah. We love when
Take
we get a chance
out.
To talk to
we
past grandmasters. Roger Van Gordon kind of set the precedent for us with that. But Kenny, the first question we generally ask every Mason on the show is how and why did you get involved in Freemasonry?
Well, as a young man, I was working in the building trades, and I was going through an apprenticeship program. Well, in the building trades, you'll find there are a lot of Masons that are in the building trades. At the time, I didn't have a clue as to what that was, but some of the journeymen that I worked with, excuse me again, apologize.
Oh, you're fine.
All good.
They were Masons, and I would notice as we were working, they would get off in the huddle and they'd start talking and different, but I really wasn't included in those conversations.
Right.
So after a few months, I just said, well, what are you guys talking about? You know, what's this thing about Freemasons? And they said, well, we can't really tell you too much. And I said, well, you know, I'd like to know more about it. And they thought, we thought you'd never ask. And,
yeah.
And so they started telling me about the Brotherhood and how men joined the fraternity to improve themselves and become better husbands and members of the community and co-workers and things like that. And so it piqued my curiosity.
Right.
So like I said, we didn't have the internet like we have today. And so I just kind of went in there. That was brand new to me. No resources to check as to what I was getting into, so it was a scary experience.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, nowadays you can kind of peek in there a little bit and see what's going on.
Yes, you can. A lot more than you can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
I hate that. I shouldn't say I hate that. It's just the internet, for what it's done for Freemasonry, it's also in at times hurt Freemasonry, because
a double-edged sword.
That's the perfect way to say it, a double-edged sword, because unfortunately some people have a stigma about us,
mm-hmm.
and we can't shake it, and the internet sometimes does not always help with that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So but like he said, you know, they were I waited so long for you to ask me that. Well, that's like when I was 19, I asked Grandpa, and he goes, you know how long I've been waiting for you to ask me? Because, again, and I've said this on the show before, and I mean it, growing up as a third-generation Mason, you know, seeing my dad and Grandpa, you kind of stumble in the kitchen as a kid, and you can see him studying, and mm-hmm. I've said it till I've been blue in the face, and you've backed me up. When it comes to brand identity, the square compass in G is the most beautiful, just best-looking brand logo that has ever been created. You talk about brand identity.
It's probably the oldest.
It probably is.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, the Masons do not own that symbol.
No. No one
cares. We adopted it, but yeah. it does not belong specifically to us.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, there's some trade unions out there that use square compass mm-hmm. in it. And
sure did.
It, yeah.
Sure did.
But I think, isn't there a federal law so they can't, no one can trademark the square compass?
That I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I believe I'm right on that. I could be wrong. If anybody knows that for sure, let us know. But I think someone did try to trademark it back in the, I want to say, early 1800s, and the federal government said, no, this is just two symbols put together. You can't trademark it or right. something like that.
Yeah, it's used by a lot of the old trades around the shipyards, things
right.
like that, machinists. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, we picked it up and we can't claim it as our own,
right.
even though we do as our own.
Right.
So, Kenny, you know, you said that you went through back in the 70s. A question that we generally always kind of follow up with is, with a lot of Masons in me and Todd's era, you know, which, I mean, you're 10 years older than me, but you're still not 50 yet. I'm still not 40 yet.
Right.
You're late 40s. I'm late 30s. But the point I'm making is that...
Would you quit reminding me of that, please?
it's more our generation, not so much past Grandmaster Kenny's generation, that they get the title, they get to wear the insignia, and they never come back. So with your generation, it was different. People were always going to Lodge. What kept you coming back to Lodge? Because, you know, some guys, like we said, they become a Master Mason and they can call themselves, but you never see them again. What kept you coming back?
Well, I think it was the fellowship. You know, when I joined this fraternity, I had no idea that it was going to involve so much memorization work and things of that nature. So I had no clue. And matter of fact, I joined in a lodge, Tell City, Indiana, and it was 60 miles from my house.
Oh, wow.
But I didn't know about lodges around the different areas. And so after going through the through the different degrees, I started looking for some place closer to home, and I went down through the phone book and I found Evansville Lodge, you know, and I just started going there. And
traveling from here to Perry County, that's a little bit of a haul. Just a little bit.
Well, when you don't know any better.
But that's sure all the guys got you in probably Longtail City.
Right? I did. And I'm still an honorary member there. They still claim me as their own. So I'm
that's good.
In good terms. Yeah. But like I said, it's all about the fellowship. Now, I will tell you that the secretary came up to me at Evansville after I'd been going for a few months and said, you know, we think you'd make good officer material. And I disappeared for a couple of years.
Scared you off, didn't they?
Yes, it did. As a father, had a busy job and small kids, and I just didn't think I had the time for it at that point in my life.
Well, yeah, I can see that. I'm going to do that now. I was lucky. I did most of my, you know, becoming a master and everything without a girlfriend or without a wife, kids. I mean, they're all single. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the best way to do it because you have all the time in the world to do whatever you want. Now it's a difficult for, I got two small kids at home and wife, a job and mortgage and cars, and I got to make sure I stuff taken care of before I do anything Blue Lodge wise. Yeah.
And they want to know where daddy's at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like with the podcast. Mm-hmm. A lot of these masonry podcasts, they release an episode every week. We try to do that too, but we have to stack them where we do a recording session of like four or five episodes in a day because we're both so busy. I mean, you got the factory job. I work in TV and radio, so I can't. We have to, you know, we have to stack these because we can't get together every week. It's like some nights you've got to choose between, hey, are we going to go see a degree or are we going to get together this weekend to record? Because I can't leave mama at home with the kids, both. Yep. So then you have to tell me, okay, we're going to go visit a lodge degree or no, we're going to record because it's just, you know.
It was like this week. We had stated meetings, lodge instruction, then we're recording on today.
Yeah, we had a busy week.
My wife's like, is it going to be like this for now? I said, no, this is different.
Yeah.
I forgot all about lodge instruction. Sorry.
Well, I thought when I got through being Grand Master, I'd have a lot more time, but didn't quite work that way. You know, you're constantly involved with, I do memorial services when I'm required to, and we've had the York Rite and the Scottish Rite and Blue Lodge, and it keeps you hustling.
Yeah, basically a lifetime job, not job, but a lifetime hobby, I guess you say.
Dedication, devotion.
Yeah,
there you go.
It's a brotherhood. It's a brotherhood. It is. And it's hard to just walk away from it. Yes. My son, God love him, he says, well, Dad, you're retired. You get all the time in the world. All you got to do is cut grass. And that's, I wanted to hit him in the head. Yeah.
Like, sure.
Yeah. This is a busy fraternity, and we do it out of love.
Right.
Love for our brothers and love for our fellow man.
Yeah, so that's something my wife never understands. I went to a degree in Illinois for a guy I've been online, see his Master Mason degree. He's like, why would you drive 2 hours to see a guy you've never met?
Because he's become he's a brother we met online. He's a good friend.
He's a friend, and it's all about brotherly love, and I wanted to see it. I wanted to see him go through that. I don't get it.
Well, and then you and I both know that You know, you may go into a lodge and be a stranger.
Yeah.
But after you're there for a short period of time,
mm-hmm.
you walk out, you've got friends that last a lifetime. Yeah. You have people that you would consider your brothers. And you know that if you needed something, there's somebody there that would help bring you along, right. guide you along, give you assistance, whatever needed to be, you yeah. know. So it's worthwhile.
Oh, it's absolutely worthwhile to me. I enjoy it. I've always enjoyed it. The fact I took, you know, 5-6 years off to start my family and everything, but now I'm back into it, and I can't get enough of it still.
Yeah.
You know, to this day.
So I got one more thing I want to talk about, and then because ever since we first heard about this trial 2 years ago, it's been something that's fascinated us. And we have at Founders Day this year, which we always record at Founders Day, we had Brother Troy Wilson set in with us, and he talked a little bit about it.
Right.
So, and with Kenny being a part of that, I really want to hit on that. But one other thing I want to talk about, because there's only been three times in the show history where we've had, well, three times today, counting today, there's only been three times where we've had a past grandmaster or a current grandmaster on. And one of the things we always like to talk about is how you got in Grand Line. So who appointed you to the Grand Line, and what was that like when you started going through the chairs at Grand Line? Was that an overwhelming experience? I'm sure that's got to be stressful in some aspects, right? Because that is a commitment like no other when you become part of the Grand Line, right?
Well, yes. A good friend of mine, William Reiners, he had been appointed to go through the progressive line, we call it, and he was a member of my lodge, and so, you know, sometimes the lodge will do fundraisers, things like that, because there are certain things that the grandmaster has to do.
Right.
One is like his reception at his lodge. We try to raise money to help promote that. So Bill was a friend of mine. We weren't buddy buddies, but I mean, we were,
right.
we were cohorts in the lodge, and right. we about the same age group. And so I just wanted to help him out. So I started doing fundraisers for him. Well, I was working down at the Scottish Rite because I had retired from the sheriff's office, and I had gone to work to Scottish Rite. Just as a kind of a maintenance man, give me time, give me something to do with and still be in contact.
Right.
And he came down there one day, and he said, I want to talk to you. He said, I'm looking for someone to put in a progressive line. He said, I've talked to different ones, and we think that you would be a really good choice. And I was stunned. I did the fundraisers, and I was friends with Bill's because he was my friend.
Right.
I didn't think of...
You didn't do it chasing anything.
No, I wasn't. Right. I wasn't and wasn't sure I wanted it at that time. You know, that people don't realize how hard, how much work is involved with going through the progressive line. Oh, yeah. and the hours and the days and the weeks that you will spend away from your home. There was a number of times when I was traveling, I'd wake up in the morning and I had to stop and think, where am I at and what am I doing today, you know?
Yeah.
And so to get back home was a real joy.
I'll
so he asked me that, and I talked to my wife, and she said, well, you know, I went through the unions, building trades, and then I went to the sheriff's office and spent 25 years there, and I had retired and was... Now I was working just part-time, just, you know, like when you retire, you can't really retire. You've got to kind of work yourself down with that.
Right.
And so I was helping, working at the Scottish Rite, and I was able to counsel with Freemasons that came in to talk and still do my job. Mm-hmm. And I think with what I was doing there and being friends with Bill, he asked me to consider. Well, I talked to wife, and I thought, okay, well, we'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
I really had no idea what I was getting into. But
yeah.
Yes, it starts off kind of low key, but every month, you know, you're building on that, and to the point that it becomes your life.
Yeah.
It really does for a short period of time. And not that I begrudge that. I'm very honored to serve.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot more than just wearing a collar and an apron, I can tell you.
It's basically every weeknend you're somewhere doing something. Most weeknights you're traveling different lodges.
Yes.
Well, and that's not just for the Grand Master, though, because we've had bridegroom on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had Dave Hostler on, and he was just at one point, he was what, a steward or a tiler?
Grand steward, right. Tyler,
even,
yeah.
Even just simple appointed offices like that, yeah. They're always doing something.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, with being Grand Master, that one takes precedent because that's the most busiest, but it literally seems like every one of those chairs in the Grand Line always has something going on. That is in my opinion, that is a year-long commitment. That there's no other way around it.
It is. And for to become Grandmaster, you're talking 6-7 years of,
right.
of and then if you've served in a one-year appointment prior to that,
yeah.
and I can tell you, to me, one of the hardest working people in the Grand Lodge line is the marshal.
Yeah.
And that poor fella.
Because he has to go, like, for rededications or anything like that, he has to go set all that stuff up like a week or so ahead.
Well, and sometimes he'll make 2 or 3 trips right. up there before it happens, you know. I always recommend that my marshal made an initial trip to talk to him about the dedication.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would go up like the night before. And then we would, you know, he would meet with the people and walk through what was going to happen the next day so yeah. that when we get ready to do the dedication the following morning, that they weren't, the heebie-jeebies were passed. You
right,
know?
Yeah.
They had just done it the night before and things were a lot better and it went along a lot smoother. So 2, sometimes 3 trips before the dedication.
And a buddy of mine, he was master when they rededicated Quincy in Elwood. And he needed to borrow tables and everything. Yeah, we're going to get our tables and everything. Well, we went over to deliver tables, and they were going through the whole ceremony for the next day and everything. I'm like, oh, I got to stay and check this out. And,
sure.
And this guy, I forget who it was now, he was a Grand Marshal at the time, but I asked him, I said, how many times have you been up here? I said, this is my 3rd time. Mm-hmm. From, I said, where you live? He goes, Greenwood. I'm like, holy crap.
Well, the thing of it is, we're doing this to honor the lodge as having something done. And right. We don't want to halfway do it. We want right. to do it to the best of our ability to show respect for this lodge that has right. given 50 years or 100 mm-hmm. years of service to their
150th.
Yeah.
Yeah, their 150th rededication at the Quincy Lodge. And it was done right. It was a beautiful ceremony and everything was done to the nth degree. And, you know, but you talk to, I talked to a guy down in Kentucky a couple weeks ago for a cave degree down there. Their grandmaster was standing right next to me, and you would have never known it. He didn't have a grandmaster's apron on, didn't have a jewel on.
He was dressed like an average Joe. You sent me the picture. You said, here's Kentucky's current grandmaster.
Yeah. And I'm like, you guys don't like do grand honors or anything? He said, no, that, you really you're don't make a big deal out of it. I'm like, man, you guys, not in Indiana.
well, but that's true. But like, you know, like around here in southern Indiana, a lot of times I'll just go put on a regular apron and stuff. And somebody said, well, don't you want to be recognized? I said, they know me by now. Yeah, and if they don't, then what's the point?
You know? And that's what's great around here. There is so many, you know, past grands around here, really. I mean, because I was at Honeyberg at night when he had 5 past grandmasters.
I was working late and I didn't make the meeting. Yeah, and they were.
And I was like, it's so great because my home lodge in Tipton, the only time we saw a grand line officer is we done something wrong. I mean, that was the only time we saw any Grand Line officers or lodge of instruction or something like that. So it was really up there. It was more like it was us against Grand Lodge. Where down here, it feels more like, hey, we're right there with Grand Lodge. Grand Lodge is working with us. And I don't know. I think it's because of the concentration we were in. There's no way Grand Lodge could really come to go to every single lodge in that area, being around Indianapolis, Hamilton, Tipton County, where there's just so many lodges. You just, they had to pick and choose where to go, and we just lost out probably.
Well, we never did. I never did want to go to the lodge to take any kind of punitive action. You know,
right.
I always wanted to go there in support of the lodge. And that's why most Grand Lodge feels that they should be doing.
Mm.
This is one of the reasons that you see the guys out on the road so much. It's to show you that, hey, we're here for you. We're here to right. support you, and we appreciate everything that you do for the fraternity.
I think it's gotten a lot better, but I mean, really, me and all the years I was at Austin Lodge, we had Barkdahl there once. I think he was junior grand warden, and we had actually elected a member who we shouldn't have elected because he didn't demit properly from our lodge. And he came up and said, you can't do that. I'm like, okay, but that's the only time we ever saw a Grand Line officer there. And I think I always kind of say, you know, most guys, all those guys down at Grand Lodge, all they want is our money and everything. And I'm like, okay, I guess you guys tell, you got to teach me this. But now that I see down here where I see, you know, you, I see Ken Willis,
Reiners.
Yeah, Reiner, Dave Morgan, all those guys, and even Randy Seipel come down here quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, for as far north as he lives, yeah. He comes down to the DuBois County area and down here to Vandenberg County area, yeah. Warwick County area. For as far as he's got to travel, Randy Seipel makes appearances on the regular down here in the center.
Actually, it feels like, you know, Grand Lodge does care about the little lodges out there in the country.
Our little country lodges, we always talk about.
You know, it just, but going through a chair originally, it didn't feel that way.
I understand that. Yeah. And like I said, we've worked very hard over the last several years to change that point of view. I remember going to a couple of dedications that when we got finished for the afternoon, the master had come up to me and he says, you know, he said, Grandmaster, he said, you know, used to, we'd always look forward to Grand Lodge coming, but we were just as anxious for him to leave. Yeah. And I kind of stuck me for a moment. He says, we were anxious for you guys to get here, and we hate for you to leave us now. Yeah. We're having such a good time.
Yeah, I think it has. The culture has changed over the years now. And I think it has.
There's been great leadership in that Grand Line for the last several, you know, years. And looking at the Grand Line now coming up, there's several great. The state of Indiana is going to be in good shape. Okay. It has been for a while. And one thing that I love, and know you and I can't speak for other states and their jurisdictions, but what I love about Indiana is as Dave Morgan said and as Roger Van Gordon said, it's kind of an unwritten rule that the newest appointed officer, you know, they start working their way through the chairs. Then when they become Grand Master, they go ahead and appoint somebody from, you know, they set what Roger say, they divided it into North, Central, and Southern.
Right.
So it's kind of cool that way it keeps it every so often you get a grandmaster that's not exactly from the center part of the state. Right. And so I think that's fantastic because.
Yeah, not every state does that.
No, we found that out. Not every state does that at all.
They get there and say, I want to run for, you know, this office or something like that. And I think in Illinois it's that way where you can say, hey, I want to run for Grand Line.
Right.
And so you could have everybody from Chicago in Grand Line. And I like how Indiana does it where
we have people all over the state in the Grand Line. And I think that is phenomenal.
Yes.
And, you know, even if you're picked to join the progressive line, it doesn't mean that you're going to make it all the way through. Right.
That's true, too.
That's right.
So, and part of being, as you're going through the progressive line, one of your main duties, or one of your biggest, most, I consider one of the most important, is to look for that fellow that you think would be a good fit for Grand Lodge and who will do something to benefit the fraternity as a whole. And I looked around long and hard, and one day I went to a lodge meeting and I met David Morgan. And I thought, okay, this man bears to watch. And I went to a few other places, and he just happened to be there. And I thought, this is the one.
Yeah.
This is the one. And I think if you're really looking and you have the fraternity's benefit at heart, I think when you find that person, you're going to be okay. And what I looked for was somebody that I thought, well, this man will be a lot better grandmaster than I was.
Okay.
And so
that's the way you look at it.
And that's what you really want to do. You want to find somebody that you think will do a better job than you. So you think when you're grandmaster, it's not the peak, you're building.
Right.
And so I wanted to find somebody I thought could take the fraternity a little further up. And so I decided to talk to David Morgan, and we talked for a long time, and he stepped up to the plate, and I think we are very fortunate that he did.
Yeah.
And as Grandmaster to serve 2 years, I had one of the members in my line that was been appointed by a prior Grandmaster. And this fellow, his lifestyle just wasn't matching up to what we needed for a progressive line officer.
Right.
And good man, very good man. I'm not going to take anything away from him, but his priorities were different.
Right.
And, you know, you have to respect that.
Right.
And so his priorities was his church, his wife, his choir, and different things like that.
And then his
duties. But as you're going through the progressive line, it's going to absorb more of your time as you're going because the needs of the craft. And he just said, Grandmaster, he said, I just don't think that I can give of myself the way that this job is going to require it. So he stepped down, and I wished him well. And he's a great guy, and I think in his chosen avenues of pursuit that he'll continue to do good things and benefit the fraternity. But I was able to pick a second progressive line officer, in which was Randy Seipel. So I feel very proud to think that we have a Grandmaster David Morgan, and who's going to follow him if he's elected is Randy Seipel.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm very proud of the things that I was able to
do. I'm trying to think, when did we first meet Randy? I can't speak for you, but I know I met him.
I met Randy
the
years
month
ago.
I met Randy like the month that I came back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after being away 8 years, I met Randy in the month of October of 2021 after I came back in September.
Yeah, I met Randy at Grand Lodge when I was master all those years.
Randy has been just a godsend for us. Randy has been a huge supporter of what we're doing with this podcast, being Indiana's first Freemasonry podcast. Randy has been a friend. Randy's the one that gave me that definition when I was looking to join. Which one am I going to join, York Rite or Scottish Rite? Randy was the one that broke it down for me, and I was able to make the decision, okay, I'm going to join York Rite, Scottish Rite, come wait a little bit.
Right.
Like, Randy, and that's what I'm saying, like, you look at the leadership for the last few years, and then you look at where it's at now and the next year's count, we are in fantastic shape in the state of Indiana. As far as leadership for the craft. So, and the 1-2, I call it the 1-2 punch. The 1-2 punch that we have right now with the Grandmaster, Deputy Grandmaster, and them two, they have such a great relationship. You can see it across social media. You can see it at all the events they have.
Yeah. You see all the Grandmaster officers, they get along real well.
Oh, yeah.
They do.
If they don't, they're hiding it real well because they seem like they're hiding along real well.
Well, it's just like, you know, they have meetings on a monthly basis, and if there's an issue, they come together and they discuss those. You know, I always felt like, you know, if we have issues as a group, we're going to discuss those in private. But when we walk out there to face the craft, we're going to be unified.
Right.
And I think that's the way this Grand Lodge operates. And they also, if they agree on a program or something like that, everybody in that line supports that program, and then the guys that follow you, they will work together to build onto that and keep forwarding on it in an attempt to make things better for this fraternity.
Yeah, I think right now we're in probably the best shape I've seen in a long time as far as Grand Line officer. Young, and you got some young guys in there too, you know. You know, some guys who can more, you know, me and Jared's age a little bit, and you know, it's not just a bunch of, you know, gray hairs up there and stuff like that.
Thanks a lot, Val. Thanks.
You don't have that many gray hairs. You got a beautiful head of hair.
All right, Todd.
But let me ask you one more question about your grandma. But what is something during your 2 years you did in the Grand East? What were you most proud of that you did those 2 years?
That's a really good question.
I was.
I get married once in a while.
Well, for one thing, I hadn't planned on doing a second year.
Right.
And we kept putting off Grand Lodge and, you know, month by month, week by week. And finally, I was sitting at home helping my wife doing some housework around on a Sunday. And I think it was a Sunday. And I got a call. It was a call of, you know, like a group call.
Right.
And they asked me, said, would you like to go ahead and be Grandmaster for another year during this COVID thing? And I thought, oh my, you know, so I had to rethink what being a Grandmaster was like. So, I worked with the Grand Lodge officers and I did a lot of video work that was put out on YouTube and things like that.
Saw that.
And it was to kind of encourage the craft not to lose faith, you know, on how to reach out to our brothers that maybe they couldn't get out and do things on their own and still keep the brotherhood working and to stay in touch with each other and to keep things moving forward. So
I remember seeing these videos after I came back to Lodge in 2021. Yeah. If you go further back on the Grand Lodge of Indiana's YouTube page or even their social media, their Facebook, you can see a lot of these videos. If somebody really wanted to go back 4 years and do a deep dive, it's on there.
Oh yeah,
it's, and they're great messages.
Yeah,
they really are.
Well, some of them I was just sitting in my backyard, you know, because I couldn't get out either.
Yeah, you couldn't go anywhere.
So I was just trying to, I'd write something up and just sit down and just talk to the craft, just like the old Franklin fireside chats.
Right, yeah. You know?
But I felt very proud to do that. And I think it took a lot of the anxiousness away from some of our members. I had a fellow come to me just a few weeks ago, and he said, Kenny, he said, I tell you, he said, to have to go through that COVID thing, he said, I don't know if anybody ever badmouthed you. And he said, I think that you were probably one of the best people that could have been in that position that I could ever know. And I wasn't fishing for a compliment, you know.
Right.
But it, you asked me what I was proud of. I was proud of, you know, sometimes God will put you in places that you don't intend to be.
Right.
And so I think with working with the Grand Lodge line, to fill that position during a difficult time and come out on a positive side, I'm very proud of that fact. Yeah. And I'm also proud that I got to pick to what I consider going to be the finest grandmasters that we have in the next couple years.
Something to be very proud of there, that's for sure.
So, okay. I'm ready now. I want to do this because I want to talk about Rufus Smith.
He's itching for something here.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Rufus. Because in 2022, Troy Wilson came up for a degree work we had. I don't remember whose degree it was. It was in the fall of 2022, about the time we first started this podcast.
Was that Reggie?
It might have been Reggie. Troy was there, and he was selling the tickets.
Right.
And we was talking a little bit about it. And then, of course, Troy, can't say nothing bad about him. We love him. He's been a huge supporter of the podcast. He listens to every episode. Troy sat in with us for a few minutes during Founders Day this year because we always start our new season at Founders Day. And Troy talked a little bit about it. But here we've got, you know, past Grandmaster Kenny Roy, who's got a huge hand in this a little bit. So, Kenny, I would really like to, if you've got the time, I would really like to dive into this Rufus Smith trial. So for, you know, any brother listening, we've got brothers that listen to us internationally, all over the globe. We have people checking us out. Can you tell people what is the Evansville Lodge versus J. Rufus Smith trial? What is that?
Well, if I could, I'm going to have to back up just a little bit.
We have all the time in the world.
Start at the beginning.
Okay. When I was going through the Grand Lodge line, as well as when I was an officer in my home lodge, excuse me again, I have a horse throw.
There's no problem.
I think it's the weather.
All.
I think
me
it's
too.
The weather.
Yeah.
But, you know, people are people, and we are in a people business.
Right.
And like I said, in addition to that, I was a police officer for 25 years. So you're going to see people get involved in things that you think, so you may scratch your head and wonder why, but sometimes you have to go, except for the grace of God, there go I. You know, right. you just never know. So, so this happened in Lodge. You know, we'd have somebody that made a mistake, or they did something, and they maybe have committed a crime or something like that. And we tended to look at, like, okay, what are we going to do about this guy? And the common thing to do when I was going through the Lodge line was, well, let's just write this up and send it up to the Grand Master. Which is really not the proper way of doing things.
No.
So I got to looking through the Blue Book, and if you look through the Blue Book, if you look about a third of the Blue Book, it talks about Masonic offenses,
right,
and how to deal with Masonic offenses. Well, we don't seem to make ourselves familiar with that part of the Blue Book, and that's unfortunate because that puts an justified amount of responsibility on the Grand Master, and it takes away the authority of your lodge. Now, if you're running a lodge, you're the master of the lodge, it's really your responsibility to control the behavior of the members, right?
Agreed.
So I had a situation where a fellow was in the shrine, and he had done a number of things, and the shrine handed it off to me when I was the secretary of the lodge, but I was also Grand Lodge. I was starting into the Grand Lodge.
Right.
And so I wrote it up and handled it the way I thought it should be, and we just had a sit-down meeting with this guy, and he quit. And I thought, this is still not right. Mm-hmm. So I got to making myself familiar with the Blue Book, and I thought, okay, Masonic trials. That's really the proper way of dealing with it. Not that I'm wanting to get anybody in trouble, but there's a proper way of handling discipline within right. your lodge. So on top of that, then I started going through the minute books. And if you've ever have a chance to go through the minute books of your lodge, there's a wealth of information there. Oh, you yeah. just need to go through. And back in the, I went back to the late 1800s, 1900s.
Oh, wow.
And there was, you know, they followed the Blue Book. A charge would be filed against you. It would be investigated. And if they thought there was enough evidence, they'd take it to the master of the lodge, and they would read the charges to him, and the specifications that they thought should be levied. The master would say, yes, I think this warrants a trial, or no, I don't think this warrants a trial. So I looked at one of these was a trial that took place in Evansville Lodge in October of 1922. And this was a divorce matter, but it also expanded to non-payment of some bills and, you know, maybe a little domestic violence and things of this nature. So I read through it, and it was quite an interesting trial. And so I took this, and I thought, you know, what an educational tool for our lodges. Nobody seems to know how to handle discipline properly within the lodges. So I thought, I want to sit down and talk to an attorney friend of mine who is a member of our lodge. And we went through this, and I said, I think this would be a great tool to educate our members on how to properly handle a lodge, educate the officers in the lodge so that as they go through the chairs, when they get to that point of being the master,
they understand.
They have an understanding of what their responsibility is in addition to the everyday, day-to-day things.
Wow.
And it also, I wanted to put the control of the lodge back in the hands of that local lodge.
Right.
Anything that you hand off to the Grand Master, he has to account for at the annual communication. And so, really, this is unfair to dump it on him. Ultimately, he is the boss, but a lot of that stuff, the Grand Master is, he's kind of the public face of Freemasonry,
right.
and he's the cheerleader for the state. So to burden him down with all these issues before you take the proper time to handle it yourself, it's not really fair.
Right.
You know? And it takes away from some of the good that he could be doing for the fraternity. Excuse me.
So basically, the lodge should take care of it in-house instead of bothering the Grand Lodge.
If possible, right. And the thing of it is, it doesn't always end there.
Right.
If a lodge determines that they're going to follow to do a trial on a subject for a specific charge, then those the investigation's done, and then and just like a court, subpoenas are sent out, statements are made, depositions are taken for say like if you were filing a complaint,
right.
and you were not a member of the lodge, well only a an active member of the lodge can sit in an active meeting, right? So sometimes the committee would have to go to talk to these complainants and take a deposition, and they would have to swear to it and this and that, you know, and then that deposition would come back and that would become part of the trial. So, but here's the thing. Once the trial is completed, it comes up for a vote. Well, the members of the lodge, they sit there, they hear all the testimony, and they're the ones that make the decision as to whether the man violated, you know, he was guilty of a Masonic misconduct or anything of that nature. And then they also decide what his what the penalty is, whether it's expulsion, suspension, or you know a reprimand or whatever the case right. might be. So, but I noticed that this was, you know, and then and at the end of it, you know, like say, if the guy doesn't feel like he was treated fairly, then he can appeal this to the grievance and appeals at Grand Lodge the next year. So right. it's just like our regular court system. You know, you have a way of you have a way of getting justice done and keeping your lodge the way it should be. And this guy, if he doesn't agree with it, he has a chance to appeal that, and then it would go before the Grand Lodge.
I'm fascinated already, by the way.
It used to, back day, you know, I went through our lodge, but it's my old lodge, and they'd have like three or four Masonic trials a year in there. And it was just a little more prevalent. I mean, it's like, you know, like charges one guy, I don't know, I think he stole something off a guy's farm or borrowed it and never brought it back, and they filed Masonic charges against him. And something was like that simple sometimes, but some of it was pretty hardcore in some spots. But
sometimes it is, and you know, it could be theft, could be murder, could be anything. Right. You know, it's just, but it's to me, it's more appropriate for the local lodge to handle these different problems, and then like I say, it's done. Then what the settlement is sent off to the lodge, Grand Lodge, for a review.
Right.
And then it becomes up there in a file that if it ever goes there for grievance and appeals, they have a copy of that case. And then it can go before them to see if it's justified or if they feel like the lodge operated properly. Okay. But like I said, what I did was I went through this trial that was in the minutes.
Right.
And you know, they take transcriptions just like you would in a court hearing.
Oh, yeah. They're really good at it back then.
They really were. And, you know, you had to hire an attorney to sit up there with a master. They didn't, the attorney did not run the trial. The master did, but the attorney was there to help guide him along if he had questions.
Okay.
You had, you know, you had a defense. You could bring in a defense attorney that was a Mason, or you could bring in a prosecutor that was a Mason.
Wow.
Or if you didn't have anything, you could the master could assign like the junior warden to be the prosecutor or right. something like this. But we looked this over, and I thought, what a great education tool. And so we spent several weeks putting this thing together, and then I got a core of guys to start rehearsing this. And we thought we'd put it on. And we thought, well, we can do this, and we can raise money for charity.
Right.
You know, we have the Brotherly Relief Fund. So what we did was we sold tickets to the members, and they could come in. And I think we did three shows the first time we did this. Mm-hmm. So we were able to raise enough money. We sent several hundred dollars to the Brotherly Relief Fund. So. And then, you know, we also, we had the Rainbow Girls to sell concessions. So the money made off of that went to the Rainbow Girls. And so,
nice.
So this was very educational. And when they came into the lodge that night, they really had no idea what they were doing. So we set up the trial. The trial was started, went through all the testimony, all the witnesses, the depositions. And then we called on them to vote. And it's amazing, what we found was the most amazing was how people saw things in 1922 doesn't always mean that they're going to see them the same way in 2022.
Really?
So it's pretty interesting.
I wish I had seen that. I just never got a chance.
We had a chance to go.
I know. I got busy.
We both had stuff going on each showing they had because Troy really wanted us to go because that was when we had just launched this podcast. Mm-hmm. And we was like, man, well, we should get you on to talk about it and help. But we both had stuff, so we never got to see the initial three showings in 2022. And then, you know, he, like I said, he kind of just skimmed it a little bit when we talked at Founders Day this year in 2024. Right. But when I found out after talking to David Bricky, I'm like, so past Grandmaster Roy's behind this a little bit too? He goes, oh, yeah, he's a big part. I'm like, we got to sit down and talk to him about this. Yeah. Like, I want to talk about this as much as we can go, because we know the only rule in Freemasonry podcasting in any state is, you know, you can talk about anything in the monitor, and you can kind of skim the lines. You can't cross them. So I was like, whatever we can talk about this trial, I wanted to talk about, because I was just, I'm fascinated with this. Here's something that was 100, right now it's what, 102 years old?
Around that,
yeah. So I'm like, this is interesting. And then just with a name like J. Rufus Smith, I was like, that's catchy.
That's a
so,
catchy name.
Yeah.
See, well, they told me, I'm like, that's got to be a made up name.
No, names are change protected.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Really? Okay, that's what I thought. I was like, they couldn't go and air dirty laundry. It's got to be a made up name.
Well, you figure 100 years prior to, there could still be relatives.
There could be, yeah.
So we wanted to protect the names of the people as much as we possibly could.
But when I heard
could.
Rufus, I'm like, that's got to be made up. That's got to be.
Rufus was real.
Smith is pretty common name. So,
but we did the trial, mm-hmm. and we did it three times, and I think the people were astounded that their verdict was different. A little different than what the original was. But they really enjoyed it, and they just said, oh, we've never been part of something like this. Right. And I said, well, as of today, you have been.
Right.
Because this is exactly the way a Masonic trial should go. And you as a member of that lodge would be the jury.
Right.
And so now, if it ever comes up again, you've had some experience. But we got some guys that were asking about the wives coming. Well, you know, I thought about that, and I thought, well, there's really nothing secret in this Masonic trial.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically, it's just like if you went downtown and sit in a courtroom, right. Very similar. It's patterned after this, you know, the same thing.
Right.
So a Grand Master at the time gave us permission to allow some of the wives to come. And it was interesting to have the wives in there. And the wives, I just said, okay,
right.
Tonight you're a Master Mason, you know.
Right.
And I said, for the purposes of the trial, listen closely to the evidence, because we're going to allow you to vote. And it was very interesting to see the difference between the men and the women. But it wasn't as separated as you might could imagine, you know.
That was when Lentz was Grand Master, right? If I'm thinking right, that would have been during Lentz's.
No, this was when Gary Brandley was Grand Master.
Gary Brandley, okay. So yeah, I remember seeing the stuff on social media. Apparently, this was it was well received, because somebody had posted. I don't know if it was Troy or who it was, but it looked like you guys had great attendance for the first three showings of this, because social media said it was a fairly good turnout. It was a good event, and people were happy about it. I really wish we could have seen it. Yeah. I know that I'm sure that there'll be more of those coming. I wish we could have made it to the initial showings, though.
Well, we tried to have it recorded so that we use it for educational purposes, right. At Grand Lodge.
I think I still can't talk.
But that didn't really work out well. There were some problems with recording devices. But we've done it. We've done Indianapolis and Evansville and different places,
right.
Like that. And so we, we've been asked to bring it up to Terre Haute and different parts of the state, just so they'll get a feel for what it's like. And hopefully this, I'm going to say after the first year, maybe we can do it again. But it's been very, very, very beneficial.
Well, and that's one thing, too, is because we are living in, I mean, social media dominates the world now, and Freemasonry is no different. There's always Freemasonry across social media. Todd and I are very active on TikTok. Of course, everyone's on Facebook, but TikTok's very active, and it's almost guaranteed at least once a day you're going to be scrolling through something like TikTok, and you're going to see where Masons are a little upset at other Masons, and the phrase comes up, well, you don't know the first thing about this, I'll bring you up on Masonic charges. That's a term that gets thrown out a lot, but the fact is I agree with what you say. People can say the term Masonic charges all they want, but not a lot of people know what Masonic charges are. Not a lot of people know what goes into Masonic charges and Masonic offenses. And in the event that somebody actually would have a legitimate grievance to bring somebody up on a Masonic offense, most of these lodges are not going to know how to proceed with this, because that's not something that's been prevalent a lot of in the last 20 or 30 years. So when you're seeing this, like, this is how it should go. You're right. I believe that's a wonderful teaching tool for Hoosier Masons, and I'm glad that you guys did that. And I really believe, like, that will be something that if you guys are able to get it recorded kind of as a teaching tool, that'll be something that'll be beneficial to all lodges in all 92 counties in the state. You know what I mean? I think that's beneficial.
I think so too. And like I said, we're hopefully maybe around springtime, we might be able to take it up to Terre Haute. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about maybe trying to re-record it again in a good situation where we had a big space with a lot of people.
Well, you've done this, Scott, right, haven't you, in Indianapolis?
No, not in Indianapolis. Oh. We've done it. We've done it for the past masters group in Indianapolis. Okay. And we've done it in Evansville. We've done it in a few different places. But at one point, we were going to take it to Kentucky, but we never got any follow through. I think Our grandmaster and the grandmaster of Kentucky was wanting to come and sit and watch this trial. I tell you, the thing that I thought was funny about having the ladies join us was they enjoyed it, for one thing. And I sometimes wonder what the ladies think that we do in lodge. You know? I think my wife tend to think that we just argue over little bitty things, like, you know, who's going to take out the trash, right, or who's going to fix the next meal. But she saw that we, you know, the ladies seemed to see that we took our fraternity seriously,
right,
and that we meant to raise the status of our members, that, you know, we wanted them to do better, and they wanted to improve themselves and do better, yeah, in the community. And I think when the women saw that, it took us a little bit more
a little more serious,
and they thought, hey, this is more, there's more to this than I thought there was. Yeah.
So a question I have is based off the success of this J. Rufus Smith trial, and I mean, it's been 2 years now. It's widely known that it has been a success, at least in my opinion, it has. Of all of these lodges in this Evansville area, and, you know, you think of Warwick County, Vandenberg County, and Posey County, of all the Masonic lodges that's in this little 1 hour Evansville hub here, would you guys be open to doing more trials based on other cases that you can find, or is it just going to kind of remain with this one J. Rufus Smith trial? Because I'm sure in the archive somewhere there's a lot more where you're like, you know, this could be one too.
I would be more than happy to look at other trials. You know, I've seen small trials where, you know, some guy was messing with
another master mason's
wife.
It's a taboo.
Which is a big taboo, you know. You kind of like to look at other situations where they went to the trial, and that would be interesting to those who are on the outside. You know, they're not always so cut and dry,
right.
You know. And you have to think about it, watch the evidence, listen to what's been said, and then make a decision. And I think that's where the interest comes in.
Yeah.
That'd be something to look at, because, you know, Bird's Eye, you know, Bethlehem Lodge, I don't know what we got in our archives like that. That's one thing I've never asked. Yeah, I'm a third generation Mason, but as sitting master of the lodge this year, that'd be something I'd be like, let's go look at the archives and see if we got anything here. And that would just curious, because it's, I mean, everybody likes theater, right? I mean, it's fun. You get a bunch of Masons out there acting, and, you know, there's a big meal. And
I mean, you could almost make it to a content creating thing for Grand Lodge, where you could do stuff like that once in a while.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Kenny, one thing that I feel like I remember this, but I could be wrong, or I could have the details slightly skewed. Troy, when he came up in the fall of 2022 to pitch this to us about this, he was part of the Temple Board or whatever. Because out of the four or five lodges that's in Evansville, what, three or four of them or however many is in one building, and then one lodge has its own building, correct?
Right.
So wasn't there a part of this is it was also going to be to help with the upkeep of that historic temple? Wasn't?
Yes.
I feel like that was part of that, but I could have that wrong.
I could be wrong. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, the temple building itself, because Evansville Lodge, which is my home lodge, we moved out a few years ago.
So you have your own building. The other ones are all together. Okay, yes. That's right.
But we used the temple's facilities, and we rehearsed there, and so and we used that building to do the trial. And we actually did the trial in the very room that it took place 100 years.
Oh, wow.
To almost to
That's
the day later.
Awesome. Neat. That's
so
awesome.
So that made it very even more special. But, yeah, we took a little bit of the money, and we gave it to the temple in appreciation for, you know, having everything ready and keeping things going and to help support the temple. And then we took the rest of the money, and we gave it to the Brotherly Relief Fund.
Right.
To help brothers in need.
Right. And so, they helped Rainbow, which, as we know, we do every year at Founders Day. We sit down with Demole, Job's Daughters, and Rainbow, because those are three wonderful organizations that we love to give them a chance to speak. And what's the best part about that is every year they thank us for letting some of their kids just come on to the pod. And we're like, you don't have to thank us. We're always going to support Job's, Demole, and Rainbow. Like, without these youth organizations, in my opinion, there might not be no hope for the future of this fraternity and the associated bodies.
So are there any plans to do any more, to do the plays again or do the trial again?
I was just talking about that about it. Maybe hopefully next year. No, it's okay.
Had a coffee spell.
I don't. Excuse me. We don't have anything concrete, but some plans. Okay. And you get new masters in the lodges, and you know,
they get changed around and moved around.
They get a little bit overwhelmed. You know. Yeah.
You know how cool that would be though to see that done in the Scottish Rite Cathedral.
Yeah, it would.
And
be
I'm saying this not as a Hoosier native. I'm saying this not as a Mason. I'm just saying this as a normal person in the world. Let me take off my Masonic hat. Let me take off my Hoosier hat. People around the world should see this building. And there has been people who have nothing to do with this state, nothing to do with this fraternity, have posted videos of that building. Go, this is one of the most beautiful buildings I've ever seen in my life.
And it is.
Could you imagine seeing that trial performed on the floor?
Yeah.
At the Scottish Rite Cathedral in Indianapolis. That,
they got the soundboard and everything there. They got the microphones.
Oh, perfect.
Stuff like that. And you want to video it that area. That'd be a perfect place to video it, too. But
it really is. We've done other plays there, and it's just a magnificent place to, you know, you have an audience all around you. Yep. And to make it precipitory because, you know, they become your jury,
yeah.
So they have ownership in this play. They want to be able to make that decisions. They want to be able to vote
correctly.
That's
kind of neat, right? That'd be a neat way to see a play.
My favorite reenactment thing that I've ever seen at that building was when we went to Founders Day last year in 2023, not this year in 2024.
Okay.
Harry S. Truman thing with the grandson and the reenactment of Harry Truman the night he was
at Beech Grove Lodge.
And they're like, the best part, the Secret Service, like, we're going to this lodge with you. No, you're not. I'm a Mason. Well, we're to protect you. I'm safer in this room with these men than I am with you. Yeah. Like, and I love that. Which that is available on the Grand Lodge of Indiana's YouTube. Just search Founders Day 2023. And it's
22.
No, it was 2023.
Okay.
It's search Founders Day 2023 on the Indiana Grand Lodge's YouTube page. And it is a fascinating watch. It'll cost you about 20 minutes, maybe 25 minutes, there. But it's fantastic. But seeing that there, and just that was the best part of that whole thing, because they said that was verified. He actually had that conversation with his Secret Service. We're going in with you. He goes, you're not a Mason. I'm safer with these men than I am with you.
And later on, the Secret Service guys were.
Yeah, because
he made sure they were Masons, so he could do that. But
well, you know, when I was sitting on the floor and then the Harry Truman thing, within a couple of minutes, you felt like that was Harry Truman.
Right. That's what I thought. Like, you're really Like, this is real.
He bears a very striking resemblance to Harry Truman. What is it, like, great-grandson or grandson?
Yeah, I think he said it's his great-great-grandson.
I don't recall for sure, but it was fantastic.
It was really neat, really well done. And my dad being a Missouri Mason, he'd always told me that story because he's heard about it when he was going through the degrees and everything. And never thought in a million years we'd be in Indiana, but –
yeah,
you know, but then, you know, seeing that done and everybody saying, yeah, that really did happen. He was, and then knowing the story before that his orderly that worked on the presidential yacht that was his degree that he was going to.
Like a physical therapy guy.
Yeah, physical therapy guy there. And they got to talk about masonry. That's one of the reasons why the guy joined. Well, Truman did a train stop in Noblesville, Indiana. And he, that's when he saw him in the crowd, brought him up on the train, and he rode down a little bit, but then they let him off to go back where he was going. Mm-hmm. And he told him then, that's when he said, hey, I'm getting a Master Mason degree. You think you'll be able to make it? He goes, I'll see what I can do, but I can't make any promises. And then he ended up showing up there toward the, I think it was the second half of the Master Mason, or?
Yeah.
I forget.
Yeah. And he was, like I said, he was on a campaign trail. Oh, so, yeah. I mean, every stop was planned. His time was accounted for. For him to back up and go there was just.
Well, I think he was staying in Indianapolis. I think he was staying in Indianapolis that night, I think.
And that's just, that again, that speaks to what.
Beach Grove back then wasn't a short drive. Wasn't a short drive from Indianapolis to Beach Grove back then. That was out the outskirts of Indianapolis, mm-hmm. basically.
Yes, it was.
But like Kenny said, I mean, he was. Truman at that time was on the campaign trail, mm-hmm. so every stop's planned for, every minute of his day is accounted for, and for him to be like, you know what, Freemasonry means a lot to me, I'm just gonna skip out for a few hours and go see this.
Well, I'll be the past Grand Master of Missouri and everything. That's,
I mean, yeah.
Well, he said, I've been told that several times that he preferred being called Grand Master
right.
than he did Mr. President.
Yeah. Because I guess they asked him when he came in, how you want to be addressed? And I will be addressed as the past Grand Master of the state of Missouri.
Which most, to anybody else listening, they would be like, well, you just call me Mr. President. No, you call me past Grand Master Truman. Yeah. Like, that's, it's like, I don't care that I'm the most powerful man in the world and the most powerful political seat in the world. No, you address me as my title. I'm past Grand Master of the state of Missouri.
But something else I liked on that is they didn't make him sound like he had made the right decision dropping the bombs. In Japan, they actually had someone in the audience disagree with what he did.
That was the other part about that trial.
They didn't make it all year to grace and one guy actually disagreed with him and said he did wrong and told him that.
They had people in the crowd, which you said you were sitting on the floor for that. So when that was the other thing that stood out to me, like they had people in the crowd, like pre-planned, of course. Oh, they were all, it was, the whole play was scripted, but they were heckling him about some of his decision. It's like, man, this is cool because you're literally seeing both sides of the coin here.
You're not seeing everybody agreeing with, oh, it's, I'm not going to say anything bad about him. No, I'm going to tell you, I don't like what you did there.
Well, I think there are people that would still disagree with that, but, you know, I think he did what he thought was best for the American.
Oh, yeah.
The American soldiers at the time, and the world at large.
We had no idea what he was going through at that time. I mean, that was way before I was born. I mean, I'm just saying, it's like, you'd imagine having to make that decision to drop that bomb. It's like, holy crap, that could not have been easy at all.
Well, I think he thought, as most, that the Japanese would have continued to fight door-to-door, man-to-man for months and months, and there would have been a lot greater loss of life. And so I think he made the decision based on what he thought would save the most lives.
Which, again, you can find that on the Grand Lodge of Indiana's YouTube page. Because I think that that was talked about at some point. It mentioned how hard of a decision this was. It was just a fantastic thing. The best thing I've ever watched in there, other than what Roger Van Gordon did at Founders Day that same day, his infamous Cassius Was Right, which is also available on YouTube.
But what I thought was interesting, I found out later on, here probably a couple months ago, that all the Purple Hearts that have been awarded since World War II were made during World War II. Up till just recently, they ran out and had to start making new ones. They made that many because they thought they were going to have to invade mainland Japan, and they were going to lose that many people through just that one thing. So they made that many Purple Hearts in advance, and they just ran out of them. I don't know, maybe last couple of years or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Which that was a huge concern.
Yeah.
Huge concern.
So they made that many Purple Hearts because they knew that many people were going to be injured or killed in that if they had to invade mainland Japan. So I thought, like, wow, who thinks that far ahead?
To have that kind of responsibility to send so many people out to their potential deaths, that's something we should never be able to take lightly.
No, absolutely not, no.
But if I could say one thing about this trial.
Absolutely.
We're bad about going down rabbit holes, sorry.
Yeah.
I think the biggest concern I had when we decided to try to put this trial together was that I'm not an advocate of taking everybody in the lodge that makes a violation of a rule or regulation to task and put him on trial. You know, it always says to whisper good counsel in the ear of a brother.
Right.
As long as we can do stuff like that and bring them back in line, I think that's the best route. I think trials should be handled for the more serious matters.
Right.
And for those that simply just will not take good counsel. So yeah. I say it's the proper way of handling it, but I think it's also a last resort to do things and do them properly. So yeah. I hope you understand that. I'm not here to try to go after people.
And I just wonder this. Since you guys have started doing this, have we had any actual Masonic trials in the state since then?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, we don't hear about them, of course, because that's lodge business. But, you know, I just wonder if that made it go up anymore or the same or whatever.
I mean, no, I know of a few. And the thing of it is, if you are taken to trial and expelled, you know, it's recorded and it's known in the database. But I don't think it's proper for that lodge or the Grand Lodge to fly it out to the advertise entire state you've been expelled or whatever the case might
be. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't ask specifics at all, but I mean, it is curious that since you guys know, okay, here is a proper way to do a trial now, has more lodges gone to that? If they send it to the Grand Lodge like they would normally do in the past?
I would think probably so, but again, I couldn't tell you for sure.
Right.
I do know there have been a few,
really?
And they have worked according to the way they're supposed to do so. And if there's any questions, I'm sure that they will come up with, if they want to appeal it, they can appeal it to jurisprudence. Not jurisprudence, but grievance and appeals at annual communication. So.
Okay. What are you typing over there, Bill?
our wonderful host, David Brickney, was just texting me.
Oh, okay.
To find out some stuff. So,
well, I definitely want to see that play. I know I want to see when it originally came out, or the trial, not play, the trial. But, you know, me and Derek were saying, it'd be awesome to have it at the Sky Striker Theater in Indianapolis because, for one, you got great acoustics. Two, you got everything there to either record it just audio or even visual. By video, it'd be awesome to put it out there and let more people see this. And
well, after this podcast comes out, if you guys see a big interest in doing it again, I'm sure that the crew members that put on the last few plays, would be happy to
and again get together. Without giving out contact information, if anybody is interested, Todd and I do know,
let us know
several people, and we will get with the proper channels because we know several of the Masons that are part of this. Kenny's part of it. Troy Wilson's part of it. I believe is Reiner's part of this. David Brickney's part of this.
How many people total? That take
how is the crew?
Actual portrayers, probably around 11 or 12.
David, sit down in front of that mic real fast. I'm going to turn your mic on. Just sit down real quick, 1 second. Let me bring you in here and unmute you. So go ahead and run through there. Who's all part of this?
We've got Worshipful Brother Mark Holtz, Worshipful Brother David Cotton, Worshipful Brother Doug Patmore, Worshipful Brother Troy Wilson, Worshipful Brother Max Holland, Past Grandmaster Kenneth Roy, Worshipful Brother David Straw, Past Grandmaster Bill Reiners, and myself.
Okay.
And Rick Corey,
yes.
So, Todd, when we leave, you know, we've been taking pictures here because when we do these lodge tours like we did at Honeyburg and Vincennes, we take pictures. I would like to take a picture of that board there because that is well put together. So, this has been something that, like we've mentioned, it's been talked about for a very long time. This is something they've put 2 years of their hearts and soul in, longer if you consider when they first started finding stuff and working on it, and I think that this could be a big deal. So for anybody out there that is listening, that is interested in this, we just read a list of names, and if you don't know these guys, get with me and Todd, and we will put you in contact with them, because these guys love nothing more. Everybody loves a little bit of theater, or you wouldn't be involved in... I feel like, in a way, everybody in Masonry involves a little bit of theater, you know, hashtag if you know, you know, without giving too much away.
We all think we're actors.
Right. Yeah. So, we will definitely put you in touch with the proper channels. So, do you got anything else, Slick? Otherwise, we're going to start to...
I'm pretty good so far,
wrap this up.
A great episode.
This has been a fantastic episode. Well, if you're good, I think in the interest of moving along today, because we've got such a packed day, we can't leave any episode without asking the question. However, I would like to preface this. I would like to have, if time allows at some point, I would like to have Kenny back on.
Oh, yeah.
Because we spent a lot of time talking about his time in Grand Line and in the and you know with the trial and everything, but there's always so much more we can talk about.
Oh, yeah.
There's always multiple episodes we could get out of talking to one brother, but we can't let an episode end without asking the question. So,
yep.
If you don't have anything else,
yep, go ahead.
I'm gonna ask the question. So, past Grandmaster Roy, one of the questions that we or the question we end every show on is you know, when people think back on your journey as a Mason, because eventually we're going to lay down our working tools and go to the lodge above, because nobody gets out of life alive. So when people think back on you as not necessarily a man, but more as a Mason, what do you hope they remember about you? What do they hope they think about when they think of you as a Mason, as a past Grandmaster, just as a brother?
Wow.
There's no right or wrong answer. There is none.
I just hope that they look back at me and feel like I was someone that they could turn to, maybe they could trust, and someone that wouldn't be too judgmental right out of the box, you know. Just a good guy. That's what I hope. And if we go out of this world, I think it's the best any of us can hope for is that people, you know, we live respected and die regretted. Mm-hmm. And that is that's a goal that I hope each and every one of us can live up to.
I like that.
That was mm-hmm. a difficult, there, we all get there the same way.
We're all different.
But every answer is different. But that, I like that one a lot.
Yep.
That was really good. That was, again, it ends with service before self is what every single answer always amounts to, which
sounds
is
like
at the core of it, which is what we are.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, all right, man, you got anything?
I'm good, man.
This has been a great episode. We're rolling absolutely along here with our Newberg Files recording sessions. Something called the Newberg Files.
I apologize for the scratchy.
Oh, trust me, I had a coughing incident.
That's
back
okay.
Too,
I was trying to talk more so I can mute out the fact that Todd was choking to death. Eventually, if you'd have turned blue, I would have hit stop on the recorder. But if you weren't turned blue, I was going to keep going.
I was going to see if David could do CPR.
That's just good content.
He took a drink out of that straw and it went down the wrong pipe. Oh, yeah. But he ran out the door for David to get him a bottle of water. So I was like trying to keep talking and keep talking. So you're coughing, and I'm like, "Can God. You?" This is the fact that I work for your uncle in the TV and radio business. This is that side of me and the podcaster and the executive producer that's got to do all the editing. I'm like, I'm wanting to scream at you. Can you go in the other room if you're going to do that? Yes, your safety was second to me. The quality of the episode was first.
Of course.
Can you do? But all right, man. So this has been a great episode.
Yep.
So not that everybody doesn't know you already, but Kenny, if you wouldn't mind to introduce yourself one more time, and if you don't mind, we would love for you to run through your Masonic titles. That's kind of how we end every episode.
Oh, wow. My name is Kenneth Roy, Jr. I was born here in Evansville. My parents moved all over the place when I was growing up. But I came back to live in Evansville and through most of my adult life. I've served the fraternity since 1977. I've typical titles, but I think the greatest title that I've ever achieved is brother.
Absolutely.
That's a great one too. That's a great soundbite right there. If I could just, brother, if we could only have sound bites to preview our episodes, that'd be the one. The greatest title I ever had was brother.
Figure it out.
So for past Grandmaster Kenny Roy, for our brother that orchestrated this whole recording session, that's one thing. You know how when we go into recording dates, whether we're traveling or we're recording at home, I have to plan everything.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to set a single bit of today up. The man sitting right there, David Brick. David set all this up for us, so we were eternally great. And he brought us pizza.
I know, that's awesome.
So for Pasker and Master Kenny Roy, for David Brick, for Todd Whaley.
For Jared Atkins.
This has been another episode of That Other Masonic Podcast during our Newburgh sessions. And we will see you guys next time.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to That Other Masonic Podcast, Indiana's first Freemasonry podcast. Be sure to check us out on our social media channels, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram. The views and opinions expressed on this show belong to Brother Jared Atkins and Brother Todd Whaley and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Grand Lodge of Indiana.